Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two at the races, and I promised earlier this week that we would get an opportunity to get our last-minute Christmas shopping suggestions in, and did it on Sunday on television with Seth Merrow, and as the morning progresses, going to slip some in and mention them all to you, and of course, some. We had visits during the year, and in fact, in fairly recent memory, most notably the Louisville Story Project, better lucky than good. Virtually all of these cannot be recommended more highly. Better lucky than good is so special and unique in this genre of, equine literature, as it were, the stories from the backstretch of Churchill, and young and old riders and staff and horsemen and grooms and foremen and hot walkers, every single walk of life on the backstretch is represented in this essentially an oral history. Not to be missed. Better lucky than good. Jennifer Kelly's book, Sir Barton and the Making of the Triple Crown. If you haven't gotten it yet, should be somewhat hard to believe because we've beating the drums while she was still doing research. We were out in front of Sir Barton has been really well received, and of course Jennifer unearthed information that really had not made the press previously, and things about the early, the early Triple Crown concept and the way it started to, gain traction. But it all started in retrospect, of course. Sir Barton did. And Commander Ross, they didn't know they were winning the Triple Crown at the time. But Sir Barton and the Making of the Triple Crown by Jennifer Kelly. Obviously, I'll also, in this, I'm going to do these, every hour. Justify Lenny Shulman. And Lenny's official, the end of his tenure at Bloodhorse coming on really the 31st, basically, at the end of the year. But Lenny's essential biography of Justify. And Lenny was plugged into the Justify story right from the start. Literally, came into it after the maiden win, because we were together, actually, out at Santa Anita when Baffert said to him, "Do you want to come to the barn and see the Derby winner?" whom he assumed was McKinsey, and was led to Justify stall. And from there, Lenny was right on top of the story, and his relationship with John Gunther as well enters into it. Just terrific. So there's the first three written suggestions, and I also occurred to me on Sunday with Seth to direct everybody to Greg Montgomery's website, The Artist, right? Because you want an easy, quick present that that doesn't take a tremendous amount of effort, and is going to be very well received. Greg Montgomery's art, most notably the Travers posters. That's what he's most famous for, but there's other, there's a few other pieces that you could consider. But if there's a Travers you've been to that you hadn't thought about previously, to either the year before or the year after. I mean, typically Montgomery's piece the next year will reflect something about the previous Travers. And a lot of times it'll be the finish. I mean, there's the wonderful Street Sense Grasshopper, which is the 2008 poster. Then some years it's something more Saratoga, image. But going all the way back to the beginning, when they first started to, to have Greg commissioned for this art, it's wonderful. We've got, I've got half a dozen, and I've taken to having them autographed by connections. Nick Zito signed the Birdstone one, which is one of my favorites, with the purple sky. And I had Carl Nafsker and Ian Wilkes sign the one I just mentioned, Street Sense. And so that's an added value to the Travers posters. And just Greg Montgomery, do a Greg Montgomery search, because he's got kind of a shop. He's on like a Shopify. His website is sort of a Shopify thing. That's the easiest way. And a lot of the gift shops in Saratoga have the Greg Montgomery art. So there's our first round, and I'll give you a bunch more books and ideas for last minute. You can order them now, today, and you'll have them by Monday, Tuesday. And if you haven't finished your shopping and need some emergency gifts, Tony Black standing by. And Tony is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, I guess I'm not sure what I'm giving. Because of you and a segment that we did one day, and I was talking about Jack Vanberg. Jack Vanberg got in touch with you and got my number, and I gave him my address.
Yeah.
And he sent me his book, From Grit to Glory, and signed
yeah.
it. And I thought,
yeah.
geez, that's because of you, Steve, because he heard me talking about him. Jack heard me talking about him on the radio one day, and then he got in touch with you, and he told me that's how he got the number to call me. And I was so honored because, Jack had a very positive impact on my business. And he did send me the book, and he signed it, From Grit to Glory. But Better Lucky Than Good, what a title for a book that has anything to do with racetrack and racetrack experience. One day when I was at the Hall of Fame induction for My Juliet, I was standing right in front of Bob Baffert. And what an interesting guy. I mean, not just because he wins and he has great horses and done a great job with them, but you listen to his interviews, and he puts it out there just plain as it can put it out there. He's benefited a lot from his experience with quarter horses. He's benefited a lot
yep.
when learning how to get horses ready for races and get them ready for some race prior to the one that you're really aiming for. You have them come over there in optimum condition when it's the real deal, the one that you really want them to put it out there for, and the prep to the race, you get them ready, and you don't want them to absolutely, you want them to win, but not absolutely put everything out there. So when they come over for the, let's say, the prep to the Derby and then the Derby, you want them to be 100% cranked and ready to perform optimally in the Derby, something like that. But I was looking at him, and I'm thinking, when there's so much strategy that people say trainers have, and a lot of what they do with their horses is strategy, it's plans. But in many occasions, all the strategy goes by the wayside, and Better Lucky Than Good explains a lot of that. I haven't read the book, but the title explains a lot of that. There's a lot of things that play into this business that are unforeseen and not strategic planning,
yep.
and it's luck. It's lucky. It
yep.
happened to work out. And if you look back at it, you can say, oh, yeah, I planned that. Nah, some of it isn't planned. It isn't strategy. It's luck. But it's a great business, and that's why we run these races, because that's why sometimes horses pay $75, $70, and some of them pay $280. You have to run the race to see who's the winner. And sometimes the winner is the best horse, many occasions, and sometimes it's the horse that got the best trip. So a lot of luck plays into this business. And it is a great business, and at times you think you have it all figured out, and then something happens to teach you, give you a new outlook on it.
That's for sure. And speaking of something happens, you got to address this, Tony. I got two or three fun conversations for you. You saw this whip exchange at Golden Gate Fields,
right?
You know, Couton and Amador. Couton had dropped his stick on the turn, and he's cruising. Right. He's cruising by Silvio Amador, who is fading from contention, and obviously says to him, "Can you give me your stick?" And Amador does. I mean, obviously, he doesn't think about it and hands him the stick. And then the strange thing is, Couton finishes third, finishes with interest. But I didn't see Couton actually using the stick. So I don't know if he was needing a change, if he wanted to tap him for a change or what he was doing, but it's not like he, was whacking him to get up in the final strides. But I mean, obviously obviously they shouldn't have done this, and they get 30 days each. What did explain to people what you guys are talking about? And I mean, would you ever think to ask a guy, give me your whip?
No, I wouldn't think to ask, but I had been in at a track where a similar incident occurred in the early 70s, and it was Nathan Plotkin, a Bug Boy, and R.J. Martin. And R.J. Martin was just getting back on because John Tamaro, the senior, was getting him back on. He had been ruled off for several years for, something to do with his riding and not riding. And anyway, he was just getting back on. I don't know if you're familiar with R.J. Martin. He was one of the leading riders in the country, I think, in the 50s.
The guy I'm curious about, though, is Nathan Plotkin. I think I went to his bar mitzvah.
Well, he was a Bug Boy, and somebody told me it was a Pimlico. I don't think it was. It was at Laurel we were at it, because I remember I went down there after the Garden State meet, and it was Laurel, and I guess Nathan had dropped his stick, and R.J. offered him the use of his, handed it over. I don't know. I know they got suspensions and fines similar to the one that was just handed out, and the stewards really frowned upon it. And R.J. says, "I was going no place, the horse was done. The kid was dropped. It's a horrible feeling when you do drop your stick." As a rider, I didn't do it on several occasions, but there was occasions where you came to the head of the lane, or you were doing something, you were switching sticks, or you were doing something on your horse, changing holds.
Sure.
And that thing leaves you. It's like your heart drops out of your mouth. It's a horrible feeling, even if it's not a horse that is really responding terrifically to the use of the crop. But it's just a horrible feeling. You know right off the bat, if you get beat, it's going to, even if you didn't think it caused you a lot of, if it didn't cause your horse much performance to drop it, but you know that's what you're going to get accused of. But it is a terrible feeling. But you know what? If something like this occurs, you can't do it. It's just not something that happens every day, and you can't do it. You can't hand another jockey stick. But it does display some sense of camaraderie, that we're out there competing, and we're trying to take each other's wins away from them and trying to, in a highly spirited manner, keep the other jockey and horse from beating your horse. But when there comes a point at times where we have had the opportunity to help each other, we do try to help each other, and it's not so much to win. I've seen riders make an attempt to help another rider because a rein was busted, there was a hazardous, dangerous situation. Dropping the stick isn't, a dangerous situation, but it does display some camaraderie, but it doesn't set well when it comes to the visibility of doing something like that to the public and, of course, to the officials. Yeah, can't do it.
Yeah.
I can't say, listen, I'm going no place. You know when you can actually say you were going no place after you cross the wire and galloping out, and you come back and you can tell the person if you want to be the jock to give the an owner or a trainer some insight in how the horse was performing. Then I came down the stretch, this horse was empty, I couldn't get him to go on and do any more than what he was doing. But you can't come down the stretch, you know, come standing up on him and saying, well, it's over. He's not doing anything. You know, he's done. And it doesn't sell well to the public when they see you're giving up before the wire. You have to ride to the wires, to pass the wire. I always hate to see riders starting to raise up five jumps before the wire. And half the time, it doesn't, not more than half the time, 99% of the time, doesn't make a difference. But it doesn't sell well to the public. You're out there, they're betting their money, and you're supposed to give optimum 100%, 110%, whatever, performance on you and get your most out of your horse, you know. But it's almost comical when these things do occur, and they don't occur regularly, you know, somebody handing a stick. But I'll never forget the Nathan Plotkin and the R.J. Martin, the Bug Boy, and the old rider coming back after several years suspension, R.J. Martin, and that occurring. And I'm thinking, R.J. was just being friendly to another young kid in the jock room. You know, here's a young kid. I'll help him. You know, I feel bad for him. I know that feeling, dropping a stick. It's an empty feeling. Here you go, son. Take mine. I'm done. You know, and that's the way they came back to the jock room. And, you know, when they came back to the jock room, nobody even, like, said anything that they thought there was a severe infraction. Until the stewards called down, they said, you handed it, you know, they looked at it and viewed it several times on the rerun, and then they had movies the next day, and I can remember standing in the movies listening. And, you know, they both were reprimanded and, of course, suspensions and fines. It's the only thing that is, only option that is left for the officials. They have to do that. But,
yeah.
It isn't a race fix scandal or scheme that was ongoing. It was just a gesture of camaraderie and here you go, son, I'm done. And that's what it was that day, and I'm sure that's what it was recently.
Yeah,
and any other time.
Now you can see the replay.
The one thing that you see jockeys getting very competitive. You know, and they come down the stretch. I've also seen, and at Parks one day, where a couple riders, I couldn't think of the names right off the bat, they came down the stretch, and they're using their sticks, but it isn't on the horse. It's on each other. Now, that's a definite infraction also. You know, the stick is supposed to be used, you know, to help you and the horse advance, not to be used to strike another jock during the running. Now, I'll tell you, one day there was a jock come in from Waterford Park and we were riding at Pimlico. And it was a really messy day. I'm coming down the stretch and I'm striking my horse and he's riding his horse. I think he finished third and I finished second. Neither one of us even won. I came back to the jock's room and I'm trying to think this boy's name. Well, he was a big guy too. And I'm washing my face in the bucket, you know, water on my bench, and I get a tap on the shoulder. I turn around, and I get sucker. I'm thinking, what's that about? You know, I can't think of this jock's name. I mean, he liked to knock me out. And he was a big guy, too. He was a big reducing jock. And I know his name. It'll come to me, but it's not going to come to me right now. And what the hell happened? And the valets grabbed him. They grabbed me, and there's a little scuffle, and it was over. He says, when you come down the stretch, you're hitting me, not your horse. And believe me, you know what? When you're coming down the stretch, there's a possibility you strike somebody, but it can be just strictly by accident. And he didn't know who I was, and I wasn't that kind of a rider, and I didn't know him, and he was riding, coming from Waterford or, you know, Mountaineer, whatever it was at the time. And I'm thinking, boy, I've been in some scuffles, but most of the time you know you did something wrong. That time, didn't even know I did anything wrong. But you know what? It's a very highly competitive, physical
sure.
sport. And sometimes things happen that you did not plan on have happening. You know, I didn't plan on hitting this guy. He took it as personal, and then he showed me how personal it was when he cracked me in the side of the head and almost knocked me out.
did you ever, we do see and have certainly seen incidents where guys grab a stick out of somebody's hand and when they have the chance, I've seen that a couple of times.
Yeah, you know, you're going to see that with guys get overly competitive, you know, and And maybe they still even have Thurston, but let's say they're coming down the stretch and you're hitting left-handed, he's hitting right-handed, you're on the outside, and you know, you might be even knocked. I've seen, and I had it done to me, and I've done it, where our sticks met, and I, you know, knocked his stick out of his hand, or he knocked my stick out of my hand. The next time he brings it up, you're going to want to grab his stick because he just cost you yours.
You
know?
Yeah.
But, this, you know, when you're in close quarters like that, you know, you can lose a stick just strictly by you're coming up to hit your horse, and he's coming down to hit his. One of you, sometimes when they sticks in tangle, one of you or both of you can lose it. Maybe both of you won't lose it, but good chance one of you are going to lose it when one's coming down, the other's coming up. You know, it happens. Things happen out there. But the handing the other stick to another jock, I haven't done that, but yeah, I have seen it a few times. And, yeah, like I said, most of the time it's just to show some camaraderie. Look, I'm going no place. Here you go, son.
Give you a hand.
But it ain't going to sell well to the steward.
No, no. Tony, the other stick, you know, we discussed last week extensively about the rule changes being considered, and you know, California settling on, you know, six taps, and they got to be underhanded. You can't raise above your shoulder. Is that enough? Do you think that's going to be an adequate compromise, and that it'll look better to the casual public?
Yeah, it's gonna look better. Is it going to serve the total purpose of what you have a stick in your hand for? No, I think it's going to limit you. You know, when you can't cock a stick, it's hard to show it to a horse when it's uncocked. You know, you can flick it forward, but it's not the same as if you're waving it and showing it to them. And sometimes showing a horse a stick, you know, and letting them see it with it being cocked will help you guide them. Even though the stick isn't a steering device, it can assist you in steering a horse that's trying to bolt or try, you know, get in or get out. The uncocked and the, you know, I don't go really for that. I do say, well, if you want to limit the use, how many times you can strike them and wait for a response before you can strike them again, I can go for that. When I was at Indiana Grand Racetrack and Casino, I was up in the steward stand, and we were there for Jockeys and Jeans, with Barry Pearl and a few of us,
yeah,
for a benefit. This was a couple, it must have been 2 years ago, I guess. Or, the stewards were up there, and I'm watching them after the race, and all they're doing after the race, and it's official, the race was official, you know, at the time, and they're doing it before the race was official, too. They were monitoring the use of the stick by each rider and each horse, on each horse. And I asked him, I said, what are you guys looking at now? He says, well, we're monitoring the stick use to see how many times they strike, how many times they strike before they go back to pumping and then strike the horse again. And they were very diligent in looking for, you know, proper use of the stick. And I thought, well, you know what? That's good. And I think at the time they just implemented the rule. It might have been three times and then wait for a response,
right,
before you can hit them again. And I thought, well, you know what? That's good. That's adequate. But when things happen, and, you know, California, you know, is doing things more or less in duress and under pressure. Believe me, that's the impression I get, you know, but it's just my own personal opinion. If you think stick use is going to, or lack of sticks is going to assist in some way to alleviate breakdowns, you're lost in space. It's got nothing, very little to do with breakdowns. You know, jockey's education and knowledge of how a horse moves and use of the stick and maybe at times needing to pull a horse up, that's going to, you know, pulling horses up and getting, if they're not traveling or something has happened during the running of the race that is giving them some discomfort and pulling up, that'll help to eliminate breakdowns. Lasix, that ain't going to help to eliminate breakdowns. It's not going to help to eliminate breakdowns. But if you have people up there monitoring, like I said before, monitoring the jockeys and the use of the stick, you don't need special rules. You know, you can pull them up. That's the steward's job. But if you do have special rules, you know, of course you want to make sure that the jockeys adhere to those special rules. And, you know, sometimes it's going to be because of habit and because of riding over the years and a particular style that you have, you're going to have to really adjust it. And you know what? You better adjust it. I don't agree with this, not cocking the stick. And I do agree there could be a certain amount of strikes or times you can use the stick. You know, so many times, you know, you want to hit three times, wait for response before you can hit again, something like that. I agree with that, but not cocking the stick. That's BS. You know,
the
horse is trying to bolt with me. There's two things I'm going to do. If I can't use the bit and my strength to keep him straight, I'm going to wave the stick at him to try to get him to come in, let's say if he's trying to bolt, and I'm going to tap him on his nose, on the soft, fleshy part of the nose, to see if I can change his mind, and he's not going to go through the outside fence. I've had him go through the outside fence. I've had him go through the inside fence, and that was with the proper, you know, with the use of the stick. It happens, okay? They're 1,000 pounds brute force strength, and I'm 110 pounds. You know, you've got steel bits, you've got rubber bits, you got all different kinds of equipment, but you know what? You can't change the equipment in the middle of the running of the race. That's something that has to be properly put on. Or, you know, I've had situations where you don't check things out, you get out on the racetrack, you leave the gate, and a noseband was too close behind the bit, and it takes away from the pressure you put in bit. Now, that's not the groom's fault or the trainer's fault. That's my fault. I'm the guy that's on the horse who made sure all the equipment is in order and properly installed on that horse's head or in his mouth. But things happen. You know, you don't check every detail sometimes, even though you're a jockey and you're on your back, and you should. But I think they're overplaying at this stick use or misuse, and I think what you just need to do is have people monitoring the race that know the way it should be used, and there should be conversation between stewards and jockeys. And if you want to limit how many times you can strike them, yeah, I can go for that. But that uncocking the stick, that's BS.
Tony, finally, I appreciate that. Finally, I don't know if you heard, if you were available on Monday, or caught up with it later, but was really pleased. I had never had a visit with Rico Da Silva, and Sunday was his last day in the irons, and really a fun visit to, you know, celebrate his fine career after he came to North America. And here he is at 44, and he's doing it so that he can, you know, really be attentive to his two young children. And he's got a second career already started, which is, you know, dealing with athletes, pro athletes, and helping them maintain confidence and mental strength. Fascinating guy. And I in a lot of ways, a little underrated, given, you know, what he accomplished in, 15, 17 years in North America.
Yeah, I read some articles that, you know, were talking and telling what he's doing and what he's going to plan on doing. And I really give him a lot of credit when, you know, you decide, yeah, your family and your career, you know, you're putting your family, of course, first all the time, and you always should. But you also need to have a livelihood or something that can generate income, because you want to do right by your family. Sometimes it takes a little financial well-being to do right. And you know what? When it comes to mentoring athletes, believe me, being a jockey, even though people don't look at us like we're, you know, generally speaking, like, well, you know, the horse is doing it, you're just up there. That's because they don't understand what a jockey's, the physical part of what a jockey does on a horse's back is, or haven't ridden that type of a situation, you know, a competitive racehorse in races. Not many people get a chance to do that. But it's a highly physical, athletic event for horse and jockey. And jockeys are some of the fittest athletes out there. And if you're doing things right, you're going to make sure that you're in 100%, you know, peak condition. Now, when it comes to mentoring someone, what better athlete to have mentoring a kid or a young athlete? You know, when it comes to one thing that I learned, and this was, you know, through high school wrestling and then being a jockey, one of the things that athletes really have to deal with, and it might take years, or they don't even know that they have to deal with it if it's not pointed out. Anxiety is one of your, or any athlete's biggest, at times, problem, competitor, hope,
yep.
drawback, anxiety.
Yep.
Anxiety is something that if you let it get the best of you, it just takes away from your overall physical ability to perform. Mental anxiety wastes your physical strength, wastes your physical ability. And until jockeys, they learn that, which some of you learn it before you ever rode a horse, I learned it at the end of my wrestling career and then into being a jockey in a few years. You know what? It's a lot easier to do this if you're up there and you remember to do two things, relax and breathe. Because being a jockey, you don't just ride a lot when you're in your height of your career or starting out. You don't just ride one a day. You know, when you're riding 5-6 races, 7-8 races, I've had a day. I can remember I rode 16 races night and day. You know, from Keystone to Meadowlands. You better know how to use yourself efficiently and effectively. You better learn and know how to control anxiety and waste of energy. You better, at each time that you're riding and performing at an optimal level, you better remember one thing, breathe, you know?
Yeah.
Fuel that engine. You're breathing, your lungs are your carburetor, like the old 49 Ford flathead six. It had a single-barrel carburetor. If your carburetor wasn't adjusted, it would backfire and sputter, and it wouldn't go no place. So jockeys have to learn how to do that. Now, if a jockey's learned how to do that as a jockey, he can certainly teach some young athlete how to do that and make them perform. I don't care if it's baseball, football, basketball, whatever sport, wrestling. Teach them at a young age, you know, and they'll be better athletes and they'll mature into better athletes.
Well, we wish Rico the best in retirement and his next career. And Tony, wish you and Kylie and the kids and everybody, family, extended, your mom and everybody, I hope it's a wonderful Christmas. It's been another great year. Extend everybody. Our best wishes, and let the listeners give them your best wishes.
Yeah, Steve, I want to wish you first off, you know, for all you do, and thank you. I want to thank you, and I also want to wish you and your family the best of holidays. It's a great time of year, brings families together. I also want to wish the happy holidays to our great listeners of this program. You know, it's a great program. I want to see people enjoy horse racing. I want to see them enjoy, of course, the holidays and your family and the family all year round. I want to see you enjoy it. When it comes to horse racing, I want to see you enjoy the competition between riders and horses out there. I want these listeners to pick a lot of winners. And if you're betting on them, well, I hope you're cashing a lot of tickets. But even if you're just enjoying the view of a highly competitive athletic event, a horse racing, come to the track. See what it's all about. Now, get up close and personal with the horses and the jockeys. It's great business. But, Steve, thank you so much for all you do for the sport and the positive that you put out there for people to enjoy about this sport. You take care. It's always a pleasure, and happy holidays to everyone.
Donnie, thanks a lot. We love you, and it's going to make it a great 2020, and Tony's going to probably add to his win total in a new decade. It'll be irresistible to have winners in yet another decade.
One more, just one more. One more winner.
I knew it. I knew it.
I love you, Steve. One more winner, 52-12 that would be.
That's a nice round number.
And only a couple years, we're only a year and a half from 70. I'm 68, I'll be 69 next year, 70 in 2021. I'd like to have one winner in the year 2021. I'd be 70 years old.
How about that? You, I'm not putting it past you.
Might happen. You take care. Love you, Steve. Happy holidays. Thanks.
Love you,
thanks
too, Tony. Not at all. The greatest. Tony Black, everybody. One of the just an institution. I mean, it is Thursday on At the Races, and the Thursday lineup has been unchanged for 15 years. Tony Black, Steve Askin, and Rich Eng. And we'll get to Steve next. Steve Askin, Rich Eng to follow. And before we wrap up today, going to talk to Doug Danner, who we haven't talked to in forever, unfortunately. Pleasure to be able to reach out to Doug. I think the last time we talked is probably Free Thinking, when he had that nice Free Thinking. That's 10 plus years ago. And Doug Danner has got a mare that he owns that is making her 108th start tonight at Turfway. Prom theme. And I mentioned the Ewell Wellings yesterday. Well, Hunter Ewell Welling, she noticed it and tweeted. And it immediately caught my eye. And knowing that we haven't spoken to Doug in too long, I reached out. And Doug will join us right near the end of the show and talk about the mare that he claimed for, I think, $8,000. And she has spent the next 6 years. I mean, when you've got a horse in the barn for 6 years straight, it's special. And she keeps winning and has been remarkably competitive. She's going after win number 20 tonight. She's a noble causeway. And you look at her record, you look at her PPs, which print out at 3 pages. We're going to talk to Doug and wish him luck tonight with prom theme as well. Let's take a break. Haskin joins us next with his year-end send-off. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $125 are on them. Sign up at ExpressBet.com using promo code BYK. That's B-Y-K. And you'll get $125 when you wager $500 within your first 30 days. See what I mean? House money just for playing the races you were going to bet anyway. Check out ExpressBet.com for more information. And don't forget to sign up using promo code BYK. B-Y-K to get that $125 bonus. You're going to love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states. Open account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The North American foal crop continues to decline, but not here in Pennsylvania. In 2019, our number of mares bred increased for the third year in a row, this time by 12.5%. Why? Our stallion roster continues to grow. We have the best incentives and bonuses. Plus, there's the stability of our racehorse development fund. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Dashing through the snow in a one-horse open sleigh, o'er the fields we go, laughing all the way. Bells on bobtail ring, making spirits bright. What fun it is to ride and sing a sleighing song tonight. Oh, jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is.
it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Now the ground is white, go it while you're young. Take the girls tonight and sing this sleighing song. Just bet a bobtail bay.
How about that?
40 as his speed. They can hitch him to an open sleigh and crack, you'll take the lead.
How about that? Who knew? Who knew there was another, there was a whole other stanza? Another set of lyrics. How about that? Diana Krall, if I'm not mistaken, and Steve Haskins. That you can see Haskins sort of in Vegas.
That wasn't Vegas. That was Catskills.
There you go. That works.
That was Nick Apollo Forte.
I taught him that with the mic from hand to hand.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's his move.
Oh God! He was on the.
There's a few haze in there. Hey, jingle bells. Hey.
He was on the hit parade for 10 minutes.
Yeah, my repertoire: jingle bells and agita.
Exactly. Oh my God! You know who contributes to this conversation is the. Dave Joseph, Dave Joseph, and John Parada. If you put the two of them together, you'll hear the entire script of Broadway Danny Rose.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's unbelievable. I'm hysterical. Every time I see Dave, you know, I don't see you playing in joints. I see you in colleges and universities folding balloons.
Well, my favorite team when he was when he was with the agent, up above 42nd Street, there trying to sell all his acts.
Yes,
about the
one-armed
exactly. Penguin or something, playing the xylophone. And,
my one-handed and my one-armed xylophone, my one-armed juggler, my blind xylophone player, and. What's her name that plays the glasses? My hand to God, not a lesson.
Right.
Next year, Carnegie Hall.
So good. The whole scene in the stage deli with Corbett,
great.
Monica, and oh God, what's his name? It was in Seinfeld. He was in Seinfeld. He played the. The old crotchety guy from Florida. Oh God, what was his name?
Well, they're all comics. They're all
I'm just saying it was one comic. I can't remember. He was big at the time when he was young, but he was a regular on Seinfeld.
Listen, Jack, not Jackie Gale, the one that was in the one that was also in Diner.
He was in
Tin Men.
I don't know if he was in Tin Men. He had a brief part in it. In I tell you, When the Mind Goes, the Jack Lemmon movie. The Jack Lemmon movie where everything goes wrong in New York City.
Which there's a couple there actually. Well, the serious or the comedy?
Oh, the comedy.
Oh, for God's sakes.
I'm going blank on that. I've seen
you're,
it. A
you're killing
times.
Me, too. Well, and Jackie Gale is one of the comics.
Right.
And Mort Gundy.
Yeah, right. Mort Gundy. Well, the guy I'm thinking of, but he had a brief part. He played the guy who tried to chase Jack Lemmon out of the church when he went in to pray at the end of the movie. And he was really big at the time, too. He was big, you know, back in the 60s.
I can't write. No, we're gonna. This is gonna be tough. We're gonna have to. We're gonna have to go to the video.
Well, the movie I'm talking about is The Out of Towners.
Out of Towners. Yes.
Yeah, and he had a brief part in there, and he was big at the time. So they gave him a brief part where he told Jack Lemmon he had to get out of the church because they were filming a commercial or something in the church.
That's a movie to go back and see. You know, when you first said when everything goes wrong, did you ever see Save the Tiger?
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. Well, that that was like his first dramatic role. I mean, after all the comedies he did with Walter Matthau and The Odd Couple and all those movies, and all of a sudden he does Save the Tiger, which was a downright depressing.
It's a very upsetting, very upsetting film, and just heartbreaking.
But nobody had ever seen that side of Jack Lemmon before. Well, you know, the thing is, you know, getting back to Broadway, Danny Rose, one of the great scenes. I mean, it was a great scene, but it was such a sad scene in a way. The character of Danny Rose and all of his acts and everything, but the whole scene about loneliness is when they're treating the Swansons to TV dinners as if they're making
the best
for Thanksgiving.
It's the best. It's almost as good as the real thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some great lines in that movie where, you know, where Mia Farrow was telling him in the car, she says, talking about her old boyfriend, he says, he got shot in the eye. He goes, oh, so he's blind? And then she goes, dead. He goes, oh, yeah, right, it goes through the
Yes, Lou, it was a Shell station, yes.
it's an absolute classic movie.
The absolute greatest.
There are two Woody Allen movies that people don't really talk about much that are absolutely brilliant movies. One is Broadway, Danny Rose, and the other is The Front.
The Front is one of my absolute favorite films of all time, not just favorite Woody film. It's
the last
incredible.
Scene, by the way, where that last line where you can see he has no way out. He has absolutely no way out. So he's gonna go out with a bang, and he goes and he gets up and he tells everybody to go
fuck themselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important.
So I mean, it's just it came as such a surprise. But I mean, the movie was so true. It was so inspired by everybody who starred the movie and made the movie, directed
Correct.
It and everything. We're all blackballed.
Blacklisted.
Blacklisted.
Correct.
Virtually. Bernardi and Zero Mostel and
Martin Ritt. Martin Ritt, who directed
Martin
it,
Ritt,
it,
yeah,
it was
right.
Zero Mostel.
Yeah. I just said Zero Mostel. That suicide scene was gut-wrenching.
It's unbelievable. Well, the scene when. You know, when he's up in the Catskills is.
It's difficult. When he only gave him the minimal amount of money and, some very, very disturbing scenes. You know, it was like Woody Allen, by the way, after Annie Hall, which, Annie Hall is coming after Take the Money and Run and Bananas and all these, Sleeper and all these crazy movies. And then he goes to Annie Hall, and then he winds up doing Interiors. And you say, what the hell is this? I don't know if you ever saw that movie.
I did. I saw it one time.
Depressing. Said,
yeah, it is. It's
God,
a very depressing film.
Go back to where you were doing.
Yeah. Well, Hannah and her sister.
Hannah and her sisters had some good comic moments, so that was.
Well, the front, the front. He only acted in it. It was not made. I mean, he didn't write or direct.
Right, I know.
Yeah, he just acted.
But Hannah and her sisters had one of the great hypochondriac scenes where he's always imagining he's sick about something, and he's complaining to his secretary, and he's saying. I got a scare, I had, I had this spot. And she goes, it was on your shirt.
All right, I have to pull us both up because we're as usual, we're hearing far off.
There's nothing doing in racing anyway.
Well, that's not true.
The big news is the big weekend coming up. You never answered me about my double or nothing offer, which still stands, by the way.
And you know what? I got the email and then I forgot what was the final.
Well, as it stands,
offer.
If Dallas wins Sunday, which they will or should, you owe us a dinner at Danny or maybe Nove and vice versa.
Okay.
For some strange reason, the Eagles win. But if I win the bet, which I'm sure I will, I'm giving you a big out. I'm giving you a double or nothing. Where if you lose the bet, I will then give you a double or nothing bet that the Cowboys win the Super Bowl. They're 30-1 right now, and of the 12 playoff teams, they're ranked number 9 in the odds. They're the 9th best odds. So it's up to you. If the Cowboys don't win the Super Bowl, then we're even. If they do, then it's dinner at Danny and Nove.
I'll extend myself.
Okay, because I'm giving you out. Chances are, most people are going to say there's no way the Cowboys are going to win the Super Bowl, but I'm giving you that out. I think they might shock people this year. So I'm willing to do that. It'll give you a chance to get out of your initial loss. The Eagles should not win. I mean, they have no team left, and the Cowboys are. I mean, it's just so far superior.
Keep talking, Steve. You're going to talk yourself right into a buzzsaw. Just keep.
I know.
Go on.
I keep talking. I know. I keep talking.
Keep talking, Jerry Jones. Go ahead. Jesus.
Well, listen,
all right.
Dak Prescott's got a bad shoulder, so.
I'm very pleased that the birds are in position to at least have a shot, and they could have folded.
Pull out last minute wins against the Giants and the Redskins.
Well, I'll
say one thing. By the way, it's amazing. By the way, football, all these number one draft picks and these first round draft picks. And all the stars are coming from these practice squads, and they're coming from Boston Scott and uh-huh. Greg Ward. I mean, where the heck these guys come from? Greg Ward looked like Antonio Brown.
There's a lot to be said, and the same is true. Same's true to some degree. With we could have this conversation about jocks. The separation between top level talent and production, it is pretty narrow. Guys that are hungry, and I mean, the Greg Ward story is so inspiring.
I know
that you can't say enough. I mean, he's a huge star at University of Houston, and he's had a great many opportunities, and he's come very close to making a roster, and here it is, and it makes the most of the opportunity. He's got physical gifts that put him in the arena. He was a great quarterback at Houston.
Yeah.
Tremendous quarterback.
Yeah.
And
so I mean, it's just you never know. I'm all these guys, by the way. They are the 7th round draft choices, 6th round, unsigned practice squad.
Yeah,
all these stars. I mean, they come from anywhere. I mean, that's why the draft is like so crazy. You're taking a shot, and a lot of guys you never hear of again.
Well,
and
did you
stars come up from nowhere?
Well, did you listen yesterday? Did you hear the conversation with Dave Goodfriend?
My computer is in the shop, so.
Oh, all right. Well, Dave Goodfriend, who has been winning for years.
I know Dave, candy camper.
He talked about mental toughness and about mental attitude and what a mammoth part of success or failure. And we certainly have got enough examples of professional athletes that clearly have the talent and wash out. And you got the flip side, which is, you know, guys that, that may be a cut beneath in terms of physical gifts, but they make up for it with mental toughness. And you talk about draft. When do you know, the draft, the whole thing with being drafted and being noticed, it some of it is, you know, just happenstance. I mean, look, Mike Piazza drafted as a favor to Lasorda, and look at that career.
Yeah,
I mean, the Brady.
Well, how many guys, Eagles, by the way, Boston Scott. What is he like? 5'6".
Well, there's a long history of guys like him, and you know, whether it's a Darren Sproles type or
that's what he looks like.
Those guys work because they that was the one smart thing that Booger McFarland said on it was the one thing that made sense. I had not really watched too many Monday night games this year. Now I understand why everybody nightly every Monday night sends out a volley of tweets about crazy silly things that he says. But he did say one thing I thought Monday night that was really quite accurate about how guys like a Boston Scott, they get obscured, and the defense sometimes just loses track of them.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And that was very evident.
Years ago, I think it was Houston had a running back that they called the bowling ball. I can't remember his name. But he was very stocky, but he was like 5'6", but, you know, he was stocky. And,
oh, yeah.
And nobody could find him.
Yep.
He would hide behind the guard,
exactly.
The offensive lineman.
Exactly. Until an opening.
His nickname was the bowling ball. By the way, speaking of Dave Gutfriend, by the way, I actually hired him once to do a handicapping feature for the when I was editing the Breeders' Cup Souvenir magazine.
What year? How long ago?
Well, this was, I'm going to say, like around 2000.
How about that?
One, two, somewhere in there. Early 2000s. So it was quite a while ago, but I want to do a handicapping column about handicapping the Breeders' Cup and so I hired him to write it.
Nice. Well, speaking of writing, let me shift gears, and I've already given one round of the last minute at the races gift guides. These are for desperate people. Call for desperate measures, and that means jumping on Amazon and elsewhere. Steve, I've already mentioned in this first round that book from the Louisville Story Program, Better Lucky Than Good. I mentioned Jen Kelly's book, Sir Barton. Lenny, of course, with Justify, and Greg Montgomery with his artwork. What books do you want me to include for people to be aware that they could get the at the last minute? Anything?
Well, I would include the Peter Lee's book on Spectacular Bid.
Yep, Spectacular Bid.
Yeah, and of course, like the ones you mentioned, if you haven't read them, you know, if you're a history buff, you have to read Jennifer Kelly's book, Sir Barton. And of course, if you know, if you're more into the modern racing, Lenny did a great job with Justify. Both of which I wrote the foreword to. So
coincidentally.
And I have a back cover blurb on Peter Lee's book on Spectacular.
So you had a busy year on the written front.
I'm on more books than anybody without writing any of them.
Well, and I know that you really enjoyed the Carol and Rosner piece on Stymie, Out of the Clouds.
Oh, that's my favorite. That's one of the great. I mean that was one of the great books. And you know, I'm on Facebook with Linda Carroll a lot too. I mean, but they both did an incredible job with that book. Anybody who hasn't read that book, that's one of the best racing books you'll ever read. And I'm not just talking about if you're into racing history. I'm talking about if you're into history, because everybody's in that book, and you know, in a very closely related way. You know, I mean, from Damon Runyon to Al Capone to J. Edgar Hoover, all the people that were associated somehow with Izzy Bieber. Izzy Bieber, one of the great characters of all time. Who was like the quintessential Damon Runyon character. and how close Hirsch Jacobs was to Damon Runyon, and what a sick horse player he was. Yeah, you know, I mean, he put his own name in the American, in English vernacular, you know, when you talk about all the Runyon-esque characters and, you know, some of the great, some of the great movies that are based on a Damon Runyon. And
sure.
One of the great horse racing movies that was based on a Damon Runyon, story, which is an absolutely hysterical movie, was Abbott and Costello in It Ain't Hay, the story about the kidnapping of a horse named T-Biscuit. But there is some, and there's very tender moments in there, but there are some Abbott and Costello routines that are just classic, that are just absolutely hysterical. But and then there's actually a glimpse. You can actually see the front of the Grand Union Hotel in the movie. But it's a fun movie, and it's all based on the Damon Runyon story, as are a lot of racing stories. But Damon Runyon is a major part of Out of the Clouds. Izzy Bieber was just, you know, a tough, hard-nosed New York street kid. It was a brawler. Yeah, I remember him, you know, in the latter days. You know, he was an old guy. You know, Hirsch Jacobs and Izzy Bieber, they owned all the horses. Izzy Bieber owned all the horses together, you know, under the name Isidore Bieber. But I never knew, you know, that he was such a roughneck. And he was beating up all these mobsters and all these tough guys and getting into all these street brawls to team up with Hirsch Jacobs, who raised pigeons up on the rooftops in Brooklyn, and used the whole theory of raising and racing pigeons to race horses that he, in the beginning, he knew nothing about. But I mean, and the closeness, and the story of J. Edgar Hoover and how close he was, how J. Edgar Hoover and Hirsch Jacobs was so successful that they were having dinner together, and Hirsch Jacobs and, J. Edgar Hoover told Hirsch Jacobs, says, you know, I just want you to know, by the way, that for like 6 months, most of your grooms and exercise riders, we infiltrated to your barn to investigate you, and you came up completely clean. You know, so, I mean, J. Edgar Hoover actually planted grooms and foremen, exercise riders and, you know, all the stable help to report back to him. But I mean, it's fascinating stuff. Like I said, Al Capone is in there, and others are that I'm forgetting about. But it's just so well told. And the whole first part of the book is mostly about Jacobs and Bieber and all the characters. And then the second part of the book, that's when Stymie comes into it. And if you don't know the story of Stymie, it's one of the classic stories, $1,500 claim. Because for years Hirsch Jacobs was. He was strictly a claiming trainer. He was,
right.
It was nothing, you know, and he would lead the country, but because he won so often, but it was mostly claimers. And then he comes up with Stymie, and he became the first trainer to become, you know, not only a breeder, but probably the most influential, one of the most influential breeders in history. The lines of his horses, you know, from, you know, Go Through Admiring and Searching and Priceless Gem and, you know, the whole line of and all the great mares that he's bred over the years. So, you know, like I said, I only remember the tail end of Hirsch Jacobs, you know, before he died. But great stuff. I mean, really was.
Out of the clouds.
Is that, you know, his son took over, and the Hirsch Jacobs died early in the year, and his son John, who nobody even knew anything about, he basically took over that year and became one of the few trainers, very few trainers, even to this day, who won two Triple Crown races with two different horses. He won the Preakness with Personality and the Belmont with High Echelon. But it was, you know, you can attribute that to Hirsch, but John Jacobs was the listed trainer for both of those horses. That was back in 1970.
Yeah, and you mentioned
it's a great book. I mean, it's really a phenomenal book. It was really one of my favorites.
Anyway, you mentioned in passing You mentioned in passing, too, that's Out of the Clouds, Carol and Rosner, spectacular bid. You mentioned the kidnapping theme with Tea Biscuit. Well, we should include Milt Toby's book, Taking Shergar.
Taking Shergar. I was just going to, that was my, that was the next one I was going to mention, which just won a big award, the Equus Book Awards, one for best horse book.
Oh, nice. And I, you know, it's funny because I know it's funny you mentioned awards. The Tony Ryan Award, was that, does any?
That hasn't come out yet.
That hasn't come out yet. Okay.
That basically will be probably Jennifer Kelly versus Lenny Shulman.
Well, there's also the finalists. There's I think six in there, including one of the other books that I want to mention. I'm pretty sure that, well, I know Out of the Clouds is in there because I brought it up the other day with.
Well, that wasn't this year.
With Seth,
I mean, Out of the Clouds was that was from a different year, right?
No, I don't think so. I think that's in this year's semifinal. That's one of the semifinalists.
For the Tony Ryan book,
or I thought it was, or was that from last year?
I thought that book came out like two years ago.
Was okay. I'll check. I'll. Hold on. Yeah. Let me see here.
Let's By the way, if you know, Milt Toby also wrote a biography on Canyon Arrow a few years ago. So if you want to read about one of the great stories in the history of horse racing, one of the most amazing stories, get his book on Canyon Arrow. I wrote the foreword to that book too, by the way.
that's a sideline you've got.
He based the book on a lot of my articles because I wrote so many articles. You know, I told the story of Canyon Arrow when nobody ever told the story or did research. So he had read all my stories on Canyon Arrow. So he went and did a book on them. But listen, I remember Milt Toby goes way back to the 60s at the Blood Horse.
Milt
has
done
late 60s and maybe early 70s, but I remember when Milt Toby wrote for the Blood Horse way back. He's, you know, so he's been around for a long time.
Absolutely.
One of the did for a while, and he came back and started writing books.
Well, he also has.
He did a book on Dancer's Image, told the inside story about the whole Dancer's Image scandal.
Well, we've had him on for all these. Yeah, we've had him on each time with each of his, you know, anything that's come out. And we had a great conversation about Dancer's Image and had Peter Fuller on as well.
Really?
You know,
okay.
Well, Milt also does the equine law books. He's got that as a, you know, kind of a. That's obviously dry material, but Milt Toby is a resource. I want to mention the Gilligan book, Around Kentucky with the Bug. Patrick Gilligan.
I'm not familiar with that.
Patrick Gilligan, you know, when Jack came to the country and he was taking him around as a bug boy, and he had copious notes, and he put it into a book, Around Kentucky with the Bug. And that was a Ryan Book Award finalist.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and really fun. I've only read excerpts. I haven't read the whole book, but it a lot of fun. And I've gotten to know Jack. I got to know Jack down in New Orleans this year, and when he had his first graded stake win, we had him on the show, but the book is mighty entertaining. You know, Irish father and son.
Sounds great.
Travels.
Well, you know what? I would love. I have no desire to write a book, but I would love to have a Tales from the Triple Crown 2. Some, you know, to get that published, because in Tales from the Triple Crown, the last chapter was Barbaro. So, I mean, you know, there've been a lot of great stories, you know, behind, you know, they're all, you know, personalized and just behind the stories, behind the scenes stories of, you know, of the Triple Crown, going all the way back to Jim French, but, you know, they're broken down by year and just told a little behind the scenes backstories and stuff like that, stuff that most people don't know about. you know, through all my writings. But I've had a lot of stuff since. But you know, the Blood Horse doesn't publish anymore. So, you know, UK now. I mean, they're publishing everybody's book.
Well, and now quite to the relief of a lot of people, the change in the State House in Frankfurt will assure the ongoing viability. The psycho who basically opened up prison doors and just let out willy-nilly anybody, it seems, he was well on his way to trying to shutter the University of Kentucky Press. So that at least has been...
Yeah. But I mean, they're writing on all kinds of books. I mean,
they're great.
I think Lenny's actually got some ideas that they're interested in. So, you know, Lenny, now that he's going to be semi-retired, it sounds like he's going to be working more as semi-retired than he did.
I know, right?
Yeah, but he still has, you know, books in mind, and so he's got an in now with the UK Press. So I think they're interested in. Yeah, so I mean, you know, they were very open to publishing racing books.
Absolutely,
I do have a lot of stories. You know, one of which is my favorite story. You know, the story of that. I guess a lot of people know, a lot of people don't know the whole story behind Mucho Macho Man and Kathy Ritvo. I mean, that's still one of my all-time favorite stories. Eric Mitchell submitted it for me, but it won one of those Bill Leggett awards or some one of those Breeders' Cup awards for best Breeders' Cup story. But I mean, it's just an amazing story, and I just told it. But
yep.
the parallel stories between Mucho Macho Man basically being born dead, that they thought, and
right.
And Kathy Ritvo basically being given up. I mean, she was practically dead herself. And you know, both of them, you know, metaphorically rose from the dead, you know, and combined to wind up winning the Breeders' Cup Classic. And the story behind both of them. So that would make a great book in itself, too. And the whole story about how Dean Reeves came to get that horse.
Yeah, they were interested in another horse out of the same race.
It was practically made. What was the name of that horse? Guided Tour or something? I forgot his
not
name.
Guided Tour. No,
not Guided Tour.
It was a decent. It was a decent horse from that crop, as it happens.
Right, and he was the horse that they were going to buy, and
yes,
and he fell in love with the horse that finished second to him, and that was Mucho Macho Man.
Exactly.
But I mean, so many backstories and stuff, and I had spoken to so many people, Tim and Kathy's kids. I spoke to them after the Breeders' Cup, and what she went through. I mean,
it's an amazing story.
She couldn't move. She couldn't breathe. She couldn't move. You know, she was basically given up for. And Mucho Macho Man, I mean, to be born dead, and they were saying prayers over him. Everybody was sobbing. The horse, she gave birth out in the field, and she was just laying there. And then Carol Rio, who bred the horse, was showing her dogs at the time, and she came rushing back, and they were crying over the dead foal. And he just not only did he get up, he jumped up and started running across the field. So everybody was crying and sobbing and that he was dead. He was born dead, and he's running across the field. I mean, it's a great story. I mean, for him and Kathy Ritvo to find each other, because originally Tim was the trainer,
right?
But he got the job at Gulfstream, and he recommended Kathy to take over the training.
But by the way, the horse, it is a good story. And so get the big, what's keeping you? Get to work. By the way, the horse that they were going to buy, who, and I said, was a nice horse in his own right, was Gourmet Dinner.
Gourmet Dinner. I knew it started with a G.
Gourmet Dinner.
Is that, Yeah, and the thing is, they wound up racing against each other later.
Oh, yeah, and he won $1 million himself. Gourmet dinner.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Steve,
and, you know, and Mucho Macho Man was like an absolute giant. And people forget he almost won the Breeders' Cup. I tell you, one of my favorite things ever in racing that I think I got from the most gratitude from, and Ernie Munich was with me at the time, and like he shook his head. I had come up with a statistic about Mucho Macho Man, and it was going into the Breeders' Cup. And I wrote, and I made sure that, you know, Gary Stevens knew about it, is that Mucho Macho Man was 0-14 when he did not have the lead at the eighth pole.
Right, I remember this. I remember this.
And he was 8-8 when he did have the lead at the eighth pole. And I said, if Gary Stevens is reading this, you just make sure you get to lead the eighth pole. So after Mucho Macho Man won the Classic, and Gary gave, you know, the post-race interview, when everybody was finished, he looked at me and he smiled, and he says, thank you. He says, when we were coming to the quarter pole, I actually thought of you. And I said, I've got to get the lead. I've got to get that lead at the eighth pole. And he did, and he wound up winning. But I thought it was great that Gary was thinking of me, you know, coming to the quarter pole in that race. From that statistic, which was an amazing statistic.
Well, and of course, the year before, he could not get to Fort Larned.
Couldn't pass horses, but he wouldn't let horses get by him.
Right.
That was the amazing thing about the horse. That's why I said you have to have the lead at the eighth pole.
Hmm. Steve, we're at the 16th ball, and I got to get to Rich Eng and Doug Danner. So, some final thoughts about 2019 and your wishes for the audience for 2020.
Well, obviously, you know, it's talk about an up and down year. I mean, you know, I think racing has faced its hardest times in a long time, having to overcome all the things that it did, and I just hope. For racing's sake, in the future, that the lesson they've learned from all this is basically how to defend yourself to the outside world, to just market yourself better, and just let everybody know, people that aren't that familiar with racing, what the sport is all about, and the love that people have for the horses and for the sport, and you know, just to try and quiet. You know, some of these activist groups, and you know, especially PETA and some of these others. But you know, it's the fans that are standing up for it. You know, on Facebook and forming all these organizations, and standing outside the racetrack saying we love racing. But it's the sport itself that has to do it. So that was obviously one aspect of the sport. And the other main aspect of the sport was the crazy. A three-year-old Triple Crown season we had in the year of Maximum Security. I think that's what, you know, people are going to remember most about this year, is the wild and wacky world of Maximum Security. Probably one of the most unusual campaigns than any horse has gone through. So, you know, we'll see what happens with the Eclipse Awards. But, you know, we've got some great news that Enable will be back again next year. Hopefully that, we'll see her again at the Breeders' Cup. I mean, that's going to be that's going to be fantastic. And Midnight Bisou, we'll see. So, you know, a lot to look forward to. I think we've got a great, great Derby trail to look forward to. I mean, it's going to be a chore coming up with 12 horses. When I can easily come up with 25 to rank, but to narrow it down to 12, to me, it's a very promising year for the Derby. It's all the top horses are all well bred, and they just look like classy horses. And I think it's going to be a great Derby trail. So we'll be starting in usual time, probably mid January. So everybody, you know, hop on board. It should be a heck of a ride this year.
Well, Steve, as always, thanks so much for a great year. Best wishes.
Same to you, Steve. Thank you.
Everybody. No, we're get ready to I don't know what, I guess we're starting, I don't know, we'll be entering that 17th year. I don't know what it is. It's 16th, 17th year.
Wow.
Something. I'm losing. I know, right? It's hard to believe. But hope it's a great season and you're going to spend some time. We got time to spend with the kids and baby. Next couple weeks?
Yeah, they're coming New Year's Day, New Year's Eve day, I should say.
Oh,
they're
nice.
They're coming Tuesday, and they'll be staying through the end of the week. And so obviously the tree's got a ton of presents around it, so we're looking forward to that. We got a brand new menorah in the window too, so we're
nice.
All set.
Nice, excellent. Well, happy and healthy, and thank you. And we will talk in 2 weeks.
Yep. Same to you and Tina. You take care.
Steve Askin, everybody. And thank Steve also for contributing to the last-minute book ideas and the gift guide. I sent out the first set of links. I'll send out the next set. And we'll come back with Rich Eng. Get Rich Eng's year-end thoughts. And as I mentioned, Doug Danner to talk about his amazing mare that is 10 years old, and makes her 109th start tonight at Turfway. Prom theme, looking for her 20th win. Unbelievable. Just amazing. I mean, could you imagine coming to the shed every day for 6 years? 6 years. And there she is. And we'll find out what kind of a mare she's like to be around. I don't think, you know, you have one around for 6 years. My guess is that she's a barn favorite and something special. In this era, 19 wins, 24 seconds, 12 thirds. It's pretty cool. For 200,000. Yeah. She's been running in the same company, essentially, her whole career. I mean, she's just a horse, but it just shows you how special they become. Back after this, though, Rich Eng joins us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
The quest for $1 million is underway, but there are still some great prizes to be won for those looking to jump.
Whether at home, at the track, or on the go, ExpressBet is your way to play the races. ExpressBet provides legal and secure online and mobile betting on more than 300 of the world's top tracks and all the big events. And when you sign up for an ExpressBet account today with promo code BYK, that's BYK, you'll receive a $125 bonus. Once you've signed up, you can take your wagering experience to the next level with XB Rewards, ExpressBet's industry-leading loyalty program. Earn points for every bet you make and cash them in on everything from wagering credits to exclusive racetrack experiences. So what are you waiting for? Sign up for ExpressBet today using promo code BYK. That's BYK to get your $125 bonus.
Conditions apply. Must be 18 or older and 21 in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet LLC and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100.
And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'll come back. Ask your doctor. Check your blood pressure.
The
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.